Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds. And they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to episode 190 of Geek Town Radio. I'm your host Dave and I have with me Daryl. How are you doing?
Hey, I'm doing great, thanks.
Good, good. It's been a little while since you were last on, so what have you been up to?
Oh yeah, it has been a while, but I've been looking forward to this. So, first off, I have been watching Lie to Me.
Great show.
Which stars Tim Roth.
Yeah.
And it's available on Amazon Prime, all three seasons of it.
Oh, cool.
I don't know how it stopped at three. This show is amazing.
Yeah.
It also stars Monica Raymond, who's appeared in Chicago Fire.
Ah, okay.
And like Mekhi Phifer, who I think most people would instantly recognize that name.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's an interesting twist on a procedural, and it centers around Dr. Cal Lightman, who runs the Lightman Group, and he's a specialist in body language and lie detection.
Yeah.
So every week we see him and his team take on various things. I'm up to more than halfway into season two. And yeah, it's an amazing show. I can remember seeing this being advertised on Sky during when it was actually running, but at the time I didn't have it. And I thought it looked interesting then. So when I saw it on Amazon, when I do my weekly scan from Amazon to make sure I'm seeing anything that might be worth watching, I decided to give it a go. And yeah, excellent show. Really entertaining.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny. It appears it got about 11 million in its first season, and then it sort of dropped to 7 million and then 6 million for seasons two and three. I think it was just that drop-off, because you're talking 2011 was when it was cancelled. So it was 2011, January was the last episode. So, I mean, it's been off air for a while. But, I mean, those sort of numbers, you probably survive now. But I thought it was really criminal that they cancelled this, because it was such a good show, and it was interesting and different. And, yeah, it was a real shame that it didn't last longer. Even for the three seasons, it's worth going to watch, definitely.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
We're about to see Tim Roth come back again as well, because Tin Star's about to start on... Yeah, just started last week, actually, 24th of January.
Oh.
So he's back in Tin Star season two. I think season one is all on catch up. That's Tim Roth and Christina Hendricks in that sort of revenge thriller where he plays a cop and set in the Rocky Mountains. But that's a really, really good show. That's on Sky Atlantic. I think Channel 4 ran it as well, ran season one. So worth going to watch Tin Star if you've not seen it.
Okay. And the second thing was I went to watch Glass, which recently opened.
Ah, yes. How was this? Because I've heard very mixed reviews of it.
I'd say it was good, but all the articles, well, not all, but the articles that I've seen sort of criticizing it all make valid points, which sort of struck me while I was watching.
Right.
Which was things like, why aren't you spending more time with this character?
Yeah.
And so on. But if you've watched the first two and you enjoyed them, I think you'll definitely enjoy this. And I think it's a good way to end the trilogy.
Yeah, this is the third film in M. Night Shyamalan's Unbreakable split, and then Glass is the last one that sort of brings all the characters together. So I don't think I saw Split. I definitely saw Unbreakable. I might go and wait until this comes on home release. And
that's interesting, because I don't think I've seen Unbreakable. I definitely saw Split.
Right.
And really enjoyed it.
Right, okay. I did want to see Split.
I would definitely recommend Split, and I would say it's probably a better film than Glasses.
Okay, I will go and have a look. I mean, he's got a great cast. It's like Bruce Willis, Samuel L. Jackson, Sarah Paulson, James McAvoy. I mean, you know, it's a good cast. It should be a decent movie, so.
Oh, definitely. And it's a very interesting take on superheroes.
Yes, because it's not a straight sort of, you know, people in cape superhero movie, is it? So.
Yeah. And the last thing that I've been doing is I got myself a DVD, which with the Hayley Dean mysteries.
Right.
Which are is that sort of a modern Murder, She Wrote. And I sort of went to it because I read a lot of those sorts of like cozy mystery books. And it's in America, goes on Hallmark Mysteries.
Right, okay.
A drama, I think they called it, the channel. And another one they have is Aurora Tea Garden, which, like this, is an adaptation of a book. And I've read all the Aurora Tea Garden books.
Right, okay.
So it's Hayley Dean, and it stars an actress that you might remember from ER, Kelly Martin.
Right, okay. That's where she's from.
And she is a former prosecutor turned therapist. As things will do in Hallmark Mysteries, someone close to her dies, disappears, and she starts investigating. Yeah, it was good. It was like, I got a DVD, it had three of them, and they're about hour and a half, like movie specials. For a lot of them, they seem to like film at least three of them a year, and they release them over like a special.
The way Hallmark tends to do some of their things is these sort of ongoing series, but ongoing series of movies. It seems sad they do it, so they're TV movies. Awesome. That's cool. So my stuff this week, finished The Punisher, its second season. I really enjoyed it. I know there has been a little mixed reaction to it, but generally...
I haven't seen any of it, so...
Yeah, generally it seems to be more positive than negative. There are a few issues with it. I mean, the usual sort of issues with it's three episodes too long, which is the same for pretty much all of those Marvel series. I think you could do them all in 10 episodes and lose some of the...
How many is it then? Is it another 13?
It's another 13. Yeah,
Cut the episode, or well, it was probably done before.
Yeah, okay. It was done before all the hacking of the Marvel series. So, I mean, this may be a final season of it. They haven't announced one way or another yet. There's a fairly good chance this is going to be a final season. But as we said before, if there is one out of those Marvel shows that could probably stand on its own without needing support from anything else in that Marvel universe, it's The Punisher, because it is very different to the other shows. I mean, I found it very enjoyable, though. It starts off as this sort of little story of Frank, who is trying to sort of live under the radar. He goes into a bar, he's getting flirty with the woman who owns the bar. Girl walks in, looks a little bit kind of nervous and shifty, so he kind of clocks her and keeps an eye on her, then sort of leaves and comes back and spots her in there again, and a group of people walk into the bar that are clearly looking for somebody. She runs to the bathroom, he goes and rescues her, and that's where the sort of whole story begins.
Okay.
And they've also kind of brought back Billy Russo's character as well, Jigsaw, so he's back in it. So you've got those sort of two plot lines running. Some of the character motivations have been kind of critical, and I understand where that's coming from. But generally, I think it's a really well-rounded, put-together series of The Punisher. I would like to see more of it, because I think John Bernthal's amazing in that role. And I think that would be, you know, it'd be well worth doing more of it. But we'll have to wait and see whether Netflix decide to keep hold of one of them or not. But who knows?
Indeed, who knows?
We have still got a season of Jessica Jones to come. So that's going to be probably a final season of Jessica Jones. But we'll wait and see for that.
Yeah. So quick question. Is it better or worse than the first one then?
I would say on a similar level. I certainly enjoyed it as much as the first one. I think he's great in that role, and I enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed the first one, I think. So definitely worth watching. Star Trek Discovery is the other Netflix show. It's been quite a lot of Netflix shows this week. So Star Trek Discovery is the other Netflix show. That's on its second episode. Still great. I like what they're doing with that. Anson Mount, I think, is superb as Pike. He's
really good.
interesting, different, you know. Jason Isaacs I really enjoyed.
Yeah.
You know, he was, again, an interesting, different captain. And you now, with Pike, you've got somebody who is closer to the sort of Kirk mold, I guess. You know, he's a bit more gung-ho and he's got some great lines. There's a thing about, where's my red thing? I was promised a red thing, which I thought was just great. When they're kind of chasing these glowy red things around the universe.
Yeah, space phenomena.
Space phenomena around the universe, and they arrive there and it's not there. Just funny, really well acted, and I'm so looking forward to seeing more of it. I rather suspect he's probably only going to be around for one season, because at some point he's got to go back to the Enterprise, but really enjoyable, really, really good. So definitely,
I really like those two episodes,
so I'm looking forward to seeing more of that. I think it was great. Also on Netflix, Good Place finale this season, just such a solid comedy, that really, really good. I like the fact that they change it up every season, and it's not in any way the sort of traditional sitcom that you would usually get. I don't want to really talk about it too much, because if you say anything about The Good Place, it starts to give things away. And
if you've
not watched it, you need to sort of watch it from season one. It's just brilliantly scripted, funny, well put together. It's silly, funny, anarchic in places, but brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And you won't find a sort of more different comedy out there at the moment. So just go and watch The Good Place. It's great. And the last thing I saw this week was Green Book, which I got sent a screener for. This is the movie which we've been hearing quite a lot about, because we've interviewed inadvertently half the people involved behind the scenes. Because I think the costume designer, one of the hairstylists, we've interviewed people behind the cameras. Yeah, so I think we've interviewed the composer for it as well. So there's a whole bunch of people, and the movie over the last sort of 18 months, this film has kept on coming up of like, oh, I'm working on this thing called Green Book, when we've asked them what they're doing next. It's essentially Viggo Mortensen and Mahershala Ali are the two lead characters in it. It's based around this African-American classical and jazz pianist and this Italian-American bouncer, you know, your proper kind of wise guy type, set in the 1960s. And Don Shirley, who is this African-American pianist, he's decided that he's going to do this tour with his trio round the Deep South of America. And of course, Deep South of America in the 1960s was still segregated. So they sort of start off in New York, and then they're basically going down into the Deep South. And he decides that he needs a driver. They need somebody that is going to be tough enough to take on any problems that maybe come up. Tony Valioga, who is Viggo Mortensen's character, is basically picked as that guy and appears somewhat racist when you first sort of meet him. And it's this sort of the way that they end up rubbing off on each other, and this relationship between this driver and this sort of role switch, where you've got this African-American guy who's been driven around by the Italian-American rather than the other way around. And Don Shirley's well-educated, knows his music, he's been to all the best schools, and Tony is your typical kind of grew up on the streets of New York wise guy, you know. So it covers some fairly serious, interesting issues. Interesting portrayal of the Deep South in the 60s, but it's incredibly funny in places as well. There's a wonderful scene where Tony's kind of eating, constantly eating. I mean, I dread to think how much weight Viggo Mortensen put on this movie, but he's constantly eating, and that's one of the things. And they head to Kentucky, and he spots a Kentucky Fried Chicken, so insists on going in, because it's a Kentucky Fried Chicken in Kentucky. When are you ever going to get that chance again? So he goes in, and they have this conversation about the fact that Don has never eaten fried chicken, which is one of those stereotypes that was perpetuated about African Americans around that sort of time. So he's sort of taunting him and sort of saying, well, you've got to try it. This is ridiculous. You must try it. And there's this is great interaction between the pair of them as Tony's trying to convince Don to eat this chicken. There's just little bits like that. It's so beautifully done. And it's just a lovely, beautiful story. It's been nominated for a whole bunch of different awards, including, I think, 5 Academy Award nominations it's had. I think it was nominated for Golden Globe for Best Picture as well. So there's a whole bunch of nominations for it, but it's well-deserved. It's a brilliant, lovely, wonderful movie, and definitely worth going to see if you haven't caught it yet. But that's Green Book, that is. I think it's still on cinematic release at the moment. But yes, worth going to see if you haven't seen it. So that's all the stuff we've been doing this week. Let's move on to some TV and film news. So we start off the TV and film news this week with the renewals, cancellations and pickups as ever. First one, this one hurt as a cancellation. Well, it's a coming to an end rather than a cancellation, I guess. But Suits will be coming to an end with a final 10-episode 9th season. And I'm very sorry to see this show go because I adore Suits. It's hilarious and so well written. I'm going to miss those characters. Although there is a spin-off coming called Pearson, which I think we talked about last week, which stars Gina Torres. So then maybe some shift of the characters as that moves on through its seasons. You may see more characters pop up in that, but they've said they're not going to directly transplant anybody over immediately. They want it to sort of stand on its own for its first season pretty much, so you may get guest spots, but you're not going to fully transplant anybody across. Have you been watching Suits? I don't know if the Suits is a show you follow.
I think I watched the first like 3 seasons and I stopped.
Any particular reason?
I just found it relentlessly depressing. You always knew something was going to go horribly wrong.
Right.
And the first season was really snappy and funny, but once it got to about when Lit gets his new female assistant.
Right, yeah.
Just around there, it just like the end games at the firm just became too much.
Right, yeah.
And I mean, it just seemed to be much else.
You should go back to it because it does actually handle that well. It's still incredibly funny. And there is this sort of, for those episodes, particularly the ones where Mike's still in it, because last sort of, you know, this season is the first season that Mike hasn't been in it. But there is this sense of foreboding building up to the point where Mike has got to get caught at some point. So there's always that hanging over it. It is worth watching to see where that sort of goes. And I know what you mean. There was a point where it got quite dark in places. And I think it gets through that and it gets sort of funnier. And it's just entertaining and well-written. And I will be very sorry to see it go. But 9 seasons, I can't really complain. 9 seasons is a good run. They've given it 10 episodes to end. So I think that's perfectly okay. And as I say, there is a Pearson show coming. There may be more spin-offs in the future from it as well, but we'll see. The Magician's has also been renewed for a 5th season.
Yes. even before the premiere of the 4th.
Yes, which is great, great news for fans of The Magician's. I'm very happy for them. I watched the first episode of it and I don't know. I didn't kind
the
of
first
get
episode
back to the...
of the first season, do you mean?
Yes, first episode of the first season.
So, you need to get it there.
There are a couple of shows that I need to, that people keep on telling me that I need to get back and watch.
Because I can safely say that the first episode, I think, is pretty much almost no indication of that season because that show is so weird. After the first season, it doesn't change as much. But yeah, from the first few episodes where it's really, I think it takes it easy so it doesn't scare you away.
Right, yeah.
And it really gets going once you get into it. So right. I would say go back to that, at least for 3 or 4 episodes.
That's one that I could do with going back to. And Killjoys is the other thing that people tell me I should go back and watch because I haven't finished watching that.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, everybody tells me that's great. And it's the type of show I should really love. But it's finding the time to fit things in. There's so much TV out there at the moment. CBS has renewed 3 shows. It's renewed Magnum PI, FBI, and a show called The Neighborhood. FBI has been picked up by Sky Witness, but they haven't scheduled it yet. That's the new Dick Wolf show. So it's Dick Wolf's the guy behind
everything.
All those procedural cop dramas
CBS. All the major procedurals that people tend to watch. Yeah. And it stars Missy Peregrine.
Yeah.
Who I think most people know from her various shows.
Yeah, Rookie Blue is probably the thing she's
definitely what people know from Rookie Blue.
So that is coming to Sky Witness sometime this year. They haven't set the date for it yet. Magnum PI, of course, is running on Sky One at the moment on Wednesday nights. We talked about this a bit last week, but Magnum PI is basically Hawaii Five-O with a slightly different cast. It's pretty much exactly... they even trade characters. A lot of the minor characters from Hawaii Five-O show up in Magnum PI. So,
oh, really?
Yeah. It's that same universe. It's the same universe as Ice MacGyver, NCIS LA. It's all part of that same little bubble. But, Magnum is the most closely related to it. It's almost a spin-off series without them having to put them directly together. But, you know, they use the same medical examiner because it's set on the same island, so why wouldn't you? They've had people like the guy that runs the shrimp truck in Hawaii Five-0. He's shown up in it. They've used some other of the minor characters that have popped up as well. So there is a certain amount of crossover with just in the general episodes with those characters. And I think there will probably be a point where they do a proper crossover where it ends up with Magnum meeting the 5-0 Task Force, because they have referenced the 5-0 Task Force. So that will come at some point.
But, interesting.
But yes, it is very much in that vein of a Y5-0. I am quite enjoying it. I think it's a really entertaining cast. There's some good banter between some of the guys. So, that's been renewed. I don't think that's a great shock that that's been renewed, because it's propping up that Hawaii Five-0 thing. So The Neighborhood is a sort of race relation comedy about a guy who is a good-natured professional conflict negotiator, played by Max Greenfield from New Girl. And they move into Michigan with their new son, and there's sort of a very different kind of new neighborhood. And Cedric the Entertainer plays their sort of African-American neighbor, and there's a sort of cultural conflict thing going on. But that's a comedy. It hasn't got a UK broadcaster yet, but they've picked that up for another season. So that may help it get picked up over here, but at the moment we don't know. So they've been picked up. Riviera, the drama from Sky Atlantic, they've announced a very advanced air date for that. That's coming back on the 23rd of May for its second season. We've got air dates for the DC shows. Flash is back on the 28th of February. Supergirl coming back on the 4th of March, Arrow on the 5th of March, Legends on the 10th of April, because Legends is back in April in the US, so there is quite a big gap. They, for whatever reason, they decided to run Legends later. So that's when they're all returning. There's lots of people commenting, oh, why is it such a big wait? The reason that there is a gap of, because they all came back in January in the US, the reason that that gap is there is because most of these network shows have four or five more spaces and more breaks before the end of their run. So
exactly.
Sky have got two options. Either they run it directly a week behind the US, but that means every
loads of weird breaks.
Yeah, loads of weird breaks.
Drive people crazy.
Yeah, so, well, it has two problems. One, it's a scheduling issue for them because they've got to find something to fill in the slot when it's not on the US.
Yeah.
So there's that. And there's also the amount of abuse they get for, why is this show not on this league? Well, we're running it close to the US, so it's skipped a week and we have to skip a week. Yeah. So there's that problem. So they tend to leave it, and that means that the earliest it could really come back is the middle of February, but then they're also running other shows at the same time. So they've got to wait for them to finish their run. So late February is about as early as you can kind of get it, really. That's just the way it is. It's not really Sky's fault. It's really the fault of the American broadcaster, and they're sort of put on one week, taken off the next scheduling. That's what causes it. So yeah, that's when they're back. Over on Amazon, they've announced that the third season of The Expanse will arrive on the 8th of February, Friday the 8th of February, with seasons 1 and 2. So if you've not seen any of The Expanse, all three of them will be on there. Season 4 is coming later this year, but they've not announced exactly when yet. But it means that we can finally get to see season 3, because as we all know from last year, The Expanse got rescued by Amazon after Sci-Fi in the US dropped it. So that means in the UK, it moves from Netflix to Amazon, and Amazon lost Lucifer, which is now moving to Netflix. So there was a sort of trade-off there. But I'm very much looking forward to watching the rest of that, because that is a great, great series if you haven't seen it.
Yep, great show. Great show.
So third season of that, 8th of February, and seasons 1 and 2 will land at the same time if you've not seen it. They've also announced the 11th of March premiere for American Gods season 2 as well. That's going to be the first episode, and then the other episodes will be coming on weekly after that. I think that's because it's a Star series, so I'm assuming it's going weekly out over there. I'm quite looking forward to this. I said at the time I thought season 1 ended in a very, very weird place, because it ended with a reveal that we all knew about who Mr. Wednesday was.
And it's
we kind of all knew that, because not only had it been fairly obvious, it was also in most of the publicity stuff. So this sort of supposedly this big reveal that wasn't really a big reveal. So it felt a bit of a kind of, okay, that's where you're going to end it. But yes, I am looking forward to it coming back. It's taken a little while to get back on screen due to the fact that they've been having showrunner problems, but glad it's actually finally back. And also on Amazon Prime, all 9 seasons in fully HD remastered Y format glory, all 9 seasons of Baywatch. Should you wish to go and watch it.
Indeed.
They've not only remastered it all in HD, it's all kind of pristine. They've also replaced a bunch of the music, apparently. So they've updated a bunch of the music with more modern things. They've done a whole sort of repackaging deal with it. But yeah, all 9 seasons of Baywatch, should you want to go and watch that if you like. Moving on to bigger news, CW has ordered 4 new pilots. So these are pilots, they're potential new shows, they may not make it to series, although it is the CW and they tend to pick up most things generally. There's a few things that slip through, but they're pretty good at picking stuff up. The 4 new series are, one's a Riverdale spin-off, although it's an Archie Comics spin-off. I'm not sure
It's not a Riverdale spin-off, it's an Archie Comics spin-off.
Yeah, they're describing it as a Riverdale spin-off, but it isn't. It's an Archie Comics spin-off. It's titled Katie Keene. It's a musical dramedy centred on the lives and loves of 4 iconic Archie characters, including fashion legend-to-be Katie Keene. They chase their 20-something dreams in New York City. Story chronicles the origins and struggles of 4 aspiring artists trying to make it on Broadway, on the runway, and in the recording studio. So it gives them a chance to kind of show off ridiculous fashion things and also singing and dancing and all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, that sounds like a perfect fit for the CW, I think. You know, it's another Berlanti series. It's coming from the same people that are behind Riverdale, Robert Angeri, Sacasta, and Michael Grassi, who are the co-exec producers and creators of Riverdale. So it's that people behind it. It's Berlanti that is the exec producer as well. So we'll see. I mean, the last time that they tried a sort of another Archie comic show was Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, and they ended up losing it to Netflix. So we'll see what happens with this. The other one is a spin-off from Jane the Virgin, called Jane the Novella. It's from the same creator. It's from Jeannie Snyder-Herman. It's a telenovela anthology series based on the quote written by Jane, the character from Jane the Virgin, with the author acting as the narrator. So it's basically TV movies of her novellas. It's the idea, which is intriguing, I guess. First story is set in a Napa Valley vineyard where family secrets and family members don't stay buried for long. So that's the premise. I never really watched Jane the Virgin, so I don't know.
So, yeah, that's well outside of me.
Same people behind it, same creator. I can imagine that if you're a fan of Jane the Virgin, you're probably going to like this. So, but we'll see how that goes. Next one is an adaptation of the Lost Boys movie. Comes from, well, there was an adaptation that directly came from Veronica Mars creator Rob Thomas, which has been floating around since 2016. Rob Thomas himself is now tied up doing this new version, this sort of continuation. Yeah, so he's doing that for Hulu. So there's that Veronica Mars thing coming. So writer Heather Mitchell, who's worked on Grey's Anatomy and Scandal, she took a pass at a new script for it, and that's the thing that's led to the pilot order. Rob Thomas is still staying on, I think, as his get producer of it. For those of you who don't know, Lost Boys is a cult classic, late 80s movie?
Yeah.
Story set in Santa Clarita, California, a town with a beautiful boardwalk, all the cotton candy you can eat, and a secret underworld of vampires. After a sudden death of their father, 2 brothers move to Santa Clarita with their mother, who hopes to start a new life in the town where she grew up. But the brothers find themselves drawn deeper and deeper into a seductive world of Santa Clarita's eternally beautiful and youthful undead. I mean, this is firmly, firmly, firmly aimed at that Vampire Diaries audience, I'm fairly sure. That seems to be where they're going for.
What's that I smell? A love triangle? Yeah, right.
Yes. I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how they approach this, because I love The Lost Boys. The Lost Boys was one of my favourite films, because, you know, I grew up in the 80s. That's my jam. That's very much my sort of movie. I love that film. Kiefer Sutherland played one of the sort of lead, and Jason Patrick were the 2 leads in that. it's going to be interesting to see what they do with this and whether they do go very much down the sort of, you know, love triangle-y Vampire Diaries route or whether it becomes something different. But I am very interested to see where that goes. And the fourth one is an adaptation of Nancy Drew, the classic American books, comes from Josh Schwartz and Stephanie Savage, who are names you've probably heard us bandy about a few times because they're the people behind Gossip Girl and Runaways. Set in the summer after her high school graduation, 18-year-old Nancy Drew thought she'd be leaving her hometown for college, but when a family tragedy holds her back another year, she finds herself embroiled in a ghostly murder investigation and along the way uncovers secrets that run deeper than she ever imagined. I have to say I'm not hugely interested in this particularly. Schwartz and Savage are going to be exec producing. Noga Landu, who is one of the writers from The Magicians, is going to be writing the script though. So
That sounds right up my alley.
Yeah.
Nice little mystery. I'll be in with that.
I'm sure it'd be fine. I mean, I never saw Gossip Girl. I do like Runaways though. I think Runaways is a good show. Now they're actually running away and not milling around like they were in the first season. But I've been enjoying the second season of it, definitely. And could be interesting. But again, all four of these shows are pilots. They might not make it to series. They might not get picked up. They joined the Batwoman pilot, which we know is coming. They announced some casting for that this week, which I haven't actually put in the notes. But they've confirmed that they're going to have Batwing in the show, which I'm very excited about because that's having another sort of Batman adjacent character in that show. The Batwoman pilot is coming again. There's no guarantee that will get picked up, although I think there's a very, very, very good chance that it will. Now we've got these four others, so we'll see what comes out of that, but looks kind of interesting. I think there's a good selection of CW shows there, very much CW shows. Moving on, we have some news. This is about a film version of The Sopranos that is in development at the moment, and they've finally found somebody to play the young Tony Soprano, and it's going to be Michael Gandolfini, who is son of the actor James Gandolfini, who played Tony Soprano in the TV series, which I thought was an interesting bit of casting.
Yeah.
I mean, they apparently did an open or, you know, wide audition for it, but they basically said that he just came in and completely nailed it because, let's face it, if anybody can do an imitation of James Gandolfini doing Tony Soprano, it really should be Michael Gandolfini, his son, who has very much looks quite similar to a young James Gandolfini and has a lot of his mannerisms, apparently. So, yeah, I mean, it makes perfect sense. I mean, he's been an actor in his own right. His breakout role was playing Joey Dwyer in HBO drama The Deuce, so he sort of was known to HBO anyway. The film comes from the Sopranos creator David Chase. It's called The Many Saints of Newark. Follows the story of Dicky Monstaldini, who is played by Alessandro Nivola, who has been in Wizard of Lies and American Hustle, who is father of Christopher, which was Michael Imperioli's character from the main Sopranos show. He was also a mentor to the young Tony Soprano. So although it follows Dicky, Tony's kind of quite a key role in it, obviously, as well. The movie is set around 1967 Newark riots, which were caused by the beating of an African-American guy by the police. This was a time when the African-American and Italian communities in Newark were at each other's throats and they were breaking out in lethal violence amongst the gangs. So it's an interesting sort of period to set it in, I think. You've got this sort of background of the riots going on and this tension between these two groups. We know a little bit about Dickie's character from things that have been said in Soprano, but he died quite early on, so we don't know exactly what happened. So I think it's an interesting area for them to explore in movie form of the Sopranos history. Was Sopranos ever a show you watched?
Yeah, I was a big fan. I did watch quite a lot of it. This is very different. I understand why they're pushing it so hard as Sopranos, getting that branding in there. But obviously this seems to be a very different thing.
Yeah, I mean, the rest of the cast is great as well. Vera Farmiga, who was was in Bates Motel. John Bernthal, who of course was Punisher, we were talking about earlier. Billy Magnussen, who was in Maniac and Get Shorty. Corey Stoll, who was the lead guy in The Strain and was in House of Cards. Their roles haven't yet been announced, but that's the cast that have come up. So there's a great, great cast in there. Script comes from David Chase, who is the man behind The Sopranos, and writer Loris Connor, who also wrote a number of episodes of The Sopranos and Boardwalk Empire, and wrote the script for The Planet of the Apes as well. So, yeah, I mean, I think that looks really good. The director is going to be Alan Taylor, who did a number of episodes of the original Sopranos series, also did a lot of episodes of Game of Thrones, and directed Thor The Dark World as well. Solid people behind the camera, solid people in front of the camera. I think this could be really, really quite special when it comes out. But Many Saints of Newark, that film is called. Don't know whether it's going to just be a TV release for HBO or whether it's going to be a cinematic release. Not sure yet, but we'll see. And lastly, Netflix are developing a Resident Evil TV series, apparently. The TV series based on the Resident Evil horror survival franchise. The people behind the TV show are Constantine Films, who are the same people who developed the game franchise into the movie series starring Mila Jovovich. It's going to keep the same basic premise, but expand the Resident Evil universe and deepen the existing mythology by exploring the darker inner workings of the Umbrella Corporation and the New World Order caused by the T-Virus outbreak. They're saying it's going to show, going to feature Resident Evil signature elements with a lot of action sequences, of course, Easter eggs for fans and stuff. A lot of this, whether you're excited about this, we're going to be derived about one, whether you like the Resident Evil franchise, and two, what you thought of the movies, I guess, because it's the same people behind the movie franchise. So I think I've seen the first film. I don't think I've seen any of the like four others that followed it. So.
I've seen every single one.
Good. So this is one that you're probably going to be looking forward to, I guess.
I would definitely be interested in watching it.
Yeah.
Obviously, Resident Evil, much like the games in terms of lore, so that it's pretty crazy. I just found when they said they'd be keeping a basic premise, there isn't a basic premise. Resident Evil is all over the place. The basic premise is the fact that they're zombies. That's about as basic as everything else is up to thing.
Zombies, virus, evil corporation. That seems to be about it, really. I mean, the movies have been the most profitable game to film franchise ever made, apparently. $1.2 billion they've made worldwide. So, first movie came out in 2002, last movie came out in 2016. The video game franchise itself is still going. Last new game landed last year, which was Resident Evil 7 Biohazard. They've just released a remake, a sort of remake updated HD version of Resident Evil 2. There've actually been 24 in total sequels, remakes and spin-offs in terms of the Resident Evil games. So, I mean, it's a hugely, hugely popular franchise. I have to say, I don't really play many of the Resident Evil games. I don't really do horror games very much either. So, you know, it's not something that I followed dramatically, but I don't know. I remember quite liking the first movie, and it had some spectacular bits of it. So,
yeah, the first movie is really, really good.
It seems like a no-brainer to me for a TV series. It makes perfect sense. Again, this will come back to whether you like the film adaptations or not, because it's the same people. It's Constantine Film who made the films behind it. We'll have to wait and see exactly what direction they go in, but I mean, Netflix is the perfect place for it, so we'll wait and see what happens with that. No premiere date or any of that sort of stuff. It's just in development, so it could be a year away, it could be 2 years away, we don't know. We'll have to wait and see. So that's all the news we've got for this week. Next, we have some interviews. This week we have not one, but two interviews for you. Both are with composers who have got films at Sundance at the moment. Sundance is running all this week and was on over the weekend. So both their films have had premieres now, although they hadn't when we did the interviews. The first guy we're talking to is Roger Swin. Roger is probably best known for scoring Justin Chon's 2017 Sundance Award-winning film, Gook. Roger's now reunited with Chon for the emotional Asian-American family drama, Miss Purple, which premiered to some very positive reviews over the weekend. Miss Purple follows the story of a young girl in Koreatown in LA. She finds herself dealing with her bedridden father after his carer decides to quit. So she ends up seeking help from her estranged brother, and the siblings are forced to reconnect and reconcile the suppressed trauma that led to their separation. So we talk obviously about Miss Purple and working with Justin again. When he's not working on his own projects such as this, Roger has another job, which is doing additional film composing for other composers. This has led to his work being featured in Del Toro's four-time Oscar-winning film, The Shape of Water. He's also worked on Daredevil for Netflix and The Defenders. He's had additional music in films such as X-Men, Maze Runners. There's a whole bunch of things that he's worked on. So we talk a little bit about working on those as well. Here's the interview with Roger Swinn. We will see you afterwards for the next interview. It's lovely to have you on to chat through some of your work. And you're on your way to Sundance pretty soon.
Yeah, I'm going to head out there Friday just in time for our premiere, which is this Friday night.
By the time this goes out, you will have had your premiere. So good luck with the film. Is it in competition for anything as well?
Yeah, I think it's in the competition category.
Okay,
cool. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's always, you know, very exciting and slightly like nerve-wracking, especially like sitting in the room with an audience for the first time.
Yeah,
you're always like, oh no, I hope they don't hate it, you know, that kind of, but yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, have you seen the whole thing kind of all done all the way through with everything in and finished already, or will this be your first time?
Pretty much. I saw a playback with everyone like you know, a day before they printed it, so I'm sure they tweaked a couple little things, but for the most part I saw it and I thought it worked really great and just kind of what Justin and I wanted, I think.
Good. So the film you're at Sundance with is called Miss Purple. It's with Justin Chon, who you've worked with before on a film called Gook, which was Sundance a couple of years ago. So that's obviously how you got together with him again for this movie. How did you come to meet Justin in the first place and start working with him?
You know, like so many things in this business, it was totally by chance, just like a mutual acquaintance connected us. And, you know, Justin was, I think it was like in November of 2016, and the deadline, you know, for submissions is like beginning of January. So it was just, you know, perfect timing, everything, you know, just barely enough time to do the score.
Yeah. And yeah. That's good. So you've come on to this new film, which, I mean, they're very different sort of premises, because Goot was about sort of race relations during the LA riots. And this one seems like a far more personal, closer story in some ways, because it's about a girl dealing with a sick father and a strange family and that sort of stuff. Are there any musical similarities between the two? Is it completely different?
Yeah. So the similarities, and a lot of people have noticed that, like in our music, our scores, they tend to be very eclectic within the movie. There's just a range of styles, especially for Gook. Gook was like, if you listen to the score, it would have sounded just like someone's mixtape. it made no sense apart from when it's not with the movie. So it's very similar in that way, but it is very different. Yeah, like you said, like it's a much more intimate movie, which is funny saying that, because when you see Gook, you would think that, oh, that's like, it's a small indie film, it's dealing with personal relationships, but this Miss Purple is even, you know, smaller, and the topics it talks about are a lot more just normal, you know, family dynamics essentially.
Yeah.
So it's really cool. And what's amazing with Justin is how he takes these really everyday kind of parents getting older, that kind of thing, sibling fights and that kind of thing. And it just makes it very powerful, which is, I don't know how he does it, but that's why he's the one making films.
Yeah, that's why he's the director and you're the composer.
Exactly.
What's your process when starting on a project like that? I mean, how involved is Justin in the process? Are you sort of dealing with temp music and then switching stuff out, or where do you start?
You know, with Gook, like I said, I came on kind of just in the nick of time, so we just kind of went for it. There wasn't a lot of prep work. But with Miss Purple, it was the opposite. He sent me the script before they even started shooting. So I was writing music for him before they even started shooting. So I was really involved. I even went on set one day. And so it was a lot of back and forth. And I think the stuff that I was sending Justin kind of informed his shooting and vice versa.
Right.
So he was very involved. I was even involved with like suggesting temp for when they're cutting the film. So yeah, it was one of the first projects where I kind of felt like I was, you know, wore more of the filmmaker hat.
Yeah.
So that was really cool. And it was really, really nice change of pace.
Yeah. It's interesting getting quite that involved in the process, because you don't often get to do that, I guess, as a composer.
Yeah, there was even one piece I just started a couple piano sketches, and one of the sketches I didn't even know, apparently he had it on his phone and he would be like listening to it on his way to shoot every day. And I think as a result, now we have a string quartet version of that piano piece in the film. And he kind of had a scene with that specifically in mind. And I didn't even know until he told me afterwards.
Wow.
So that was kind of, it was pretty flattering, actually.
Yeah. Yeah. That's awesome. Obviously, this is an indie film. Was it Kickstarter funded, this?
I think, yeah, primarily Kickstarter. And then other sources, I don't really know.
Right. Okay. They're not necessarily the biggest, you know, budget films when you're dealing with little indie films. So you mentioned sort of using a string quartet there. Was that a live string quartet, or are you dealing with samples and stuff to put that stuff together?
Everything you hear in the score that is supposed to be live is live.
Cool.
So we have a string quartet. We have a couple of guitar pieces. We have we even have a jazz combo for one cue.
Nice.
And yeah, we kind of, you know, no expenses withheld on, you know, the full thing. We recorded at Henson's, which is a studio here in LA that you might know. They did the We Are the World thing back in the 80s.
Right, yeah, yeah.
A lot of classic albums were there. Really beautiful place. And yeah, so with films like this, you know, it's definitely like a passion project. It's not something I really make money on.
Yeah.
All the money goes towards the production. And yeah, you know, you do what you got to do. I got to work a day job as a ghostwriter, supplying additional music for other veteran composers. But we love it.
It sounds really like it's going to be interesting. I hope it does really well for you at Sundance. You mentioned the ghostwriting stuff there, which is, I mean, you say ghostwriting, but there are some pretty major projects you've worked on. I mean, Daredevil, Defenders, Shape of Water, you did work on the X-Men movies. And so, I mean, that's a pretty nice set of things to be able to put on a resume, I guess. When you're working on those sort of ghostwriter things, how much freedom do you have? Are you ghostwriting off somebody else's cues, or are they sort of giving you, I want something to sound a bit like this, and they just let you go with it?
You know, it kind of varies with composer to composer. You know, how hands-on they are or how much freedom I get. In the case of Daredevil, you know, I've had the privilege of working with John Paisano for a while now. And, you know, by the time we've done like this last Daredevil season, I definitely know what he likes, and we kind of have a bit of a rapport. So he kind of lets me just run free. And, you know, only every now and then he'll kind of have to dial me back in. But again, that's because we kind of know each other at this point and know what the show needs.
Yeah.
And other projects like with John Ottman.
Yeah.
There's a lot of composers named John. with John Ottman, you know, especially certain, like with the X-Men movies, he's a little bit more hands-on, which is also really cool, because John Ottman as an editor, as you know, film editor.
Mm.
So a lot of the notes he gives me are kind of more from a filmmaker perspective. And as a result, I get to learn a lot outside of kind of the composer world. So that's super cool.
Yeah. I mean, I guess stuff like that ends up feeding back into your own composing work as well, because you're dealing with people that are sort of further down the road than maybe you are at the moment, and are these big sort of very experienced guys, and good to be able to pick up stuff and learn from what they're doing, I guess.
Yeah, 100%. I really love the fact that I have the opportunity to help write for these guys, because I kind of see it as that old model of an apprentice system, you know. And I mean, even going back as far as, you know, like Mozart, you know, taking a couple lessons from Haydn, like, you know, that kind of scenario. And I think writing music is especially true, and you really need someone to take you under their wing for some. There's only so much you can learn by reading books and studying scores.
Yeah. So how did you get into composing in the first place?
Well, it's kind of a funny story. I played music since I was a little kid, and I actually went to undergrad. I was a music major, performance major, but I actually dropped out and I switched my degree over to mechanical engineering because that, you know, it was more practical and not. But I just didn't like it. And then I just came back and I kind of had discovered film music along the way. I'm like, oh, why don't I give that a shot, you know, and, you know, did the composition thing and slowly just worked my way to today.
Yeah. Did you ever find the mechanical engineering stuff coming handy at any point?
You know, not in a direct way, of course. You know, it definitely helps with all the technical parts of my job, all the computer stuff. You know, I did loads of computer programming in my study. But I think a problem solving approach from an engineering standpoint is very systematic.
Yeah.
So I actually apply that to my writing process. You know, I'm just very methodical about it. I'm definitely not one of those people that's just like, just throw a bunch of stuff and just see what happens. You know, I'm definitely think everything out quite a bit. I'm probably a little slower though as a result.
What do you tend to start on? What instruments do you play, and what's the sort of starting point for you?
So I grew up playing trombone. That was actually my main instrument.
Oh, right.
So I probably have a tendency to like favor brass writing when I'm doing orchestral stuff, but definitely piano. Piano is probably now my main instrument. I hardly ever play the trombone. I always start with the piano, and whenever the project is more of like a musical kind of score, I always try to start with the piano and pencil paper as much as time allows. I start there. Yeah, I feel like if you can get it sounding right on the piano, then it should translate to everything else. You know, granted, some scores that are more like sound designy or electronic, that doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah.
But yeah, for the most part, I like to just stare at the piano.
Do you have any odd instruments, and what's the weirdest thing you've used in a composition?
You know, I don't have anything that's that out there. I know what you're talking about. I think, you know, back when I kind of first started out, I was a little bit more into like sound designing stuff. So I would record odd things, like, you know, I'd flip my bike upside down and do kind of weird things, or record things off the bike, or, you know, weird thing. I disassembled a printer once and made it do all kinds of weird things, got some cool sounds out of that. But these days, you know, I haven't really, there's so much good stuff that's already done for you.
Right.
In the interest, you know, you're so short on time. I tend to just kind of go for that, but I would love to have a project where we needed more of that stuff. Definitely Miss Purple was not one.
Yeah.
So
last couple of questions. First one is, what TV shows are you watching at the moment?
So actually right now, you know, I don't have cable, and I actually, you know, dropped my Netflix account, because I'm trying not to watch any shows, believe it or not, because I've just got a load of work, and I tend to fall into these rabbit holes with TV shows. But the last one I did watch actually was on Amazon, is The Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Oh, I love that show.
Yeah, I just finished season two, and it's fantastic. The production, the music, everything on that show is just awesome. And then another funny thing I've actually been watching on YouTube, not really a TV show, is this little skit that they do. It's called Adam Ruins Everything. I don't know if you
heard. I'm aware of it. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're one of those people that likes to be like, well, you know, actually, if you're one of those people at like a party, then this show's for you.
Yes. Very good. And if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Oh, man. More shows like Daredevil, I would die for. I mean, you probably heard they actually.
Yes.
Yes. Hopefully it'll pop somewhere, but
they're slowly cancelling all the Netflix Marvel shows. I'm watching Punisher at the moment, and I think there's a fair chance that probably won't make it to another season given what happened to the others, but it's brilliant. We've got one season of Jessica Jones left, which I also love, so we'll have to see. And I would hopefully they'll pop up, the Daredevil shows will pop up somewhere else, but who knows?
Hopefully. I think those Netflix shows are just amazing. And yeah, I would love to work on something like that. That's got this awesome blend of like action, adventure, and like character and story. I would love to work on stuff like that.
Cool. Well, good luck with the movie at Sundance, with Miss Purple at Sundance. Hope that all goes really well for you. And hopefully we'll talk again soon.
Great chatting, David. Thanks for the call.
Great talking. All right, speak soon. Cheers. Bye. Bye. So that was the interview with Roger Schwinn. That's the movie is called Miss Purple, if you want to go and seek that out. The next interview we have is with Piers Burbrook de Vere. Piers is an Australian composer who most recently scored the zombie comedy Little Monsters from award-winning director Abe Forsyth. That also premiered at Sundance over the weekend to some very positive reviews. It's got a great cast. It's got Lupita Nyong'o, who you'll know from films like Black Panther, Josh Gad, who is a brilliant stage musical person, but was also the voice of Olaf in Frozen as well. And Alex England, who has been in films such as Alien Covenant, he's been in Gods of Egypt, and a whole bunch of other things as well, and TV shows and stuff. So those are the three main cast members. Not only does the film has zombies and comedy, there's a lot of music in it, which is not only played on screen, but shown on screen as well. So this includes things like having Lupita playing the ukulele and Alex playing the guitar, with the minor issue that Alex couldn't actually play the guitar when they started working on the film. So we talk a little bit to Piers about how they managed to get around that and what they did to deal with that. Sorry about the sound quality on the recording on this. It ended up being a phone interview because, as I mentioned, he's Australian. He's in America, though, staying in a hotel because he was about to head off to Sundance. And you know what hotel Wi-Fi is like, so the Skype was not playing ball at all. So the sound quality is not quite as good on this one, but you can still hear him perfectly well. The interview is about 10 minutes long. We will see you afterwards with some highlights for next week on TV. It's lovely to have you on. You're about to head off to Sundance. By the time this goes out, the film will have premiered. You're all set to go. Is this your first time as well, or have you been a few times with movies?
This is my first trip to Sundance.
And, oh, cool.
And so obviously, you know, really excited to go and check it out and be there. Particularly excited to actually spend some time with people that made the film. You know, we spend so much time together in the trenches, actually, you know, putting the film together. And, you know, one of the most pleasures of this job is getting to work with really, really fun, passionate, creative people. But all of our interactions are generally under extreme pressure.
Yeah.
Trying to deliver and create this thing together. So getting to go to a film festival and actually hang out, you know, see some movies together and spend some time with all those people is what I'm sort of most looking forward to.
Yeah, that should be really good. I mean, you've done a number of movies with the director of Little Monsters before. So this one's a horror comedy. How do you go about approaching the music for something like that? Because it's an interesting mix of trying to get the balance right, I guess.
Absolutely. We go about it with a certain degree of trepidation. we really sort of have to keep an open mind in the early stages. And Abe and I, the director, work very, very closely together to try to establish the tone of the film. It is a zombie film, and there are moments that are terrifying, but in fact, it's a very sweet film. You know, it's a very heartfelt story, and so the center of it needed to that somehow. The score needed to kind of be able to deliver something at the heart of the story, something sweet and very innocent. Yeah, so there was a lot of trial and error. There often is. And I'm really glad we ended up where we did, but it's certainly not what I expected that we were going to be writing the first couple of weeks, that's for sure. Yeah, it was quite a journey.
You actually ended up co-writing with Abe Forsyth as well, didn't you? So there's songs in the movie, you're actually writing the stuff together, which is interesting.
That's right, yeah. So Abe and I are credited as co-writers for all the songs, and that's been the case for his last film as well.
Right.
And I mean, Abe tends to use music quite heavily in his character's backstory, which is always a lot of fun. And then what tends to happen is that starts to make its way through into the story on screen, and before you know it, you've got characters singing. So he'll write lyrics and sort of send them over, and then I'll start to try and, you know, come up with musical styles based on how he's described the characters to me.
Right.
One of the most enjoyable parts of the process has been actually working with the actors, because they're so fearless. It's in their DNA, and they're so enthusiastic that you can kind of throw them these challenges and they'll just, you know, they'll just launch themselves at it with no hesitation. We had Alexander England's character, the protagonist, the film, Dave. He plays this sort of washed up, angsty musician who writes these emotionally stunted kind of stadium rock / death metal songs, trying to express his childhood issues that he hasn't got over as an adult still. And poor Alex, you know, he'd never played a guitar before. I don't know if he'd ever even held a guitar.
Right.
And I only actually found that out a few weeks before, you know, he was sort of scheduled to shoot this scene. So we got together a few times in the studio and basically just figured out how we were going to manage him performing the song on the guitar and singing it in a believable way. And I wrote the song around what he could actually do on the guitar. So I found a tuning that sounded like it would work, and then wrote the whole thing with just one or two fingers.
Right.
So
yeah.
That I could show it to him. And we kind of came up with this notation using colors so that he could remember which frets to be on. And you know, he did such a fantastic job. Like it's one of my favorite scenes in the film, but you know, you'd never get a musician into a room playing an instrument they'd never played before and tell them go.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing.
That's fantastic. Definitely. I mean, that sounds like my way of learning how to play guitar, that as well.
Yeah.
I mean, you've got, the cast is great as well, because as well as Alexander England, you've got Lupita Nyong'o, who people will know from Black Panther and played Maz in Star Wars, and the brilliant Josh Gad, who everybody will know as Olaf from Frozen, I think is probably the thing that people will know from. Both amazing actors. You also taught Lupita how to play the ukulele, apparently.
Well, I didn't personally teach her how to play, but she did have, they did bring on a tutor. Again, you know, she just took on that challenge and a beautiful job. She's sort of holding a ukulele for most of the film.
Right.
She plays a, you know, she's not playing it the entire time, but she plays a kindergarten teacher who is essentially guiding and protecting her class through this horrendous apocalyptic scenario that they find themselves in. And a lot of the time she's distracting the children with, you know, through song. And it's beautiful. She does it. She did a wonderful job. And then, of course, as you say, Josh Gad, who also obviously never done any music before,
Book of Mormon.
We have the other end of the spectrum with Josh. You know, so talented, such an amazing performer. That was really, really exciting getting to work with him. And, you know, for me, that was such a highlight. And it was also kind of a bit daunting. We had the session with Josh, you know, it was wonderful. And he did brought the whole thing to life and such a wonderful job. But during the session, Abe had a sort of moment of inspiration, had this idea that we should do another version of the song that we were recording with Josh to use later in the film, but with an entirely different tone. So he basically wanted to take the lyrics that we were recording and turn them into this like down tempo, very moody, lamenting kind of swing piano jazz piece to use later, you know, later on in the film. So, you know, Josh just launched straight into improvising these a cappella vocal versions of the lyrics. And they were, you know, fabulous. Like, we were all bitches. It was really terrific. But I absolutely realized that I had to take these vocals and quickly write a song around them. It's almost like this reverse songwriting challenge, this bizarre kind of backward writing process. And just in case that wasn't sort of like a high pressure enough scenario, my writing room at the time was adjacent to the scoring stage. So I took these recordings back to my room and I could actually see them setting up the mics for the band to come in and record this song the next morning before we'd actually written the thing, you know.
Wow.
It was pretty amazing. But again, you know, somehow it all worked out, and that's another real highlight for me. Like, I think it just turned out really beautifully. It's, you know, it's one of my favorite cues.
Yeah, For something that's billed as a horror comedy, there seems to be an awful lot of music in this.
That's right. That's right. I probably get in trouble for calling it a zom rom com, but personally, I think that's what it is. Zom rom com.
Yeah. I do. Yes. Well, I'm very much looking forward to seeing it because it sounds fabulous and very, very much up my street, this sort of thing. So
excited for people to see it.
Well, I hope it goes down really well when you get out to Sundance because I would very much like to see it at some point. Good luck with it. I hope it all goes great.
Thank you.
I'll give you my last couple of questions.
Right.
What TV shows are you watching at the moment, firstly?
Last TV show that I've been watching was new season. I guess it's not that new anymore, but the new season of Twin Peaks, which I've been pretty obsessed with. You know, I was lucky enough to see David Lynch's festival last time I was actually in LA years ago.
Yeah.
That was really cool. He had quite a few performers come on and he screened all of his shorts, many of which I'd never seen before. He also screened all of his commercials, which was hilarious.
Yeah, that's amazing.
They're all amazing. And, you know, it's a lot of fun. It's totally trippy, of course.
Yeah.
But yeah, I've been thoroughly enjoying it. And Angelo Badalamenti, you know, those themes are so timeless from the original series.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a nostalgic, awesome thing to kind of see that stuff alive again.
Yeah, that's brilliant. Yeah, that sounds like it must have been a great night.
It was really cool.
Yeah. And if you had the opportunity to work on any TV show, past, present, or future, which show would it be?
Oh, gosh. That's a really, really hard question. I probably would say the same answer that I just gave you. Just because
Two Peaks.
I'm racking my brain just because, you know, it's something more interesting to say, but... Oh gosh, yeah. Look, I'm just gonna have to give it Twin Peaks again.
Yeah, that's all right. It's a good choice. It's a good choice. Awesome. Well, I'll let you get back to it. Good luck with Sudden Dads. Hope the film goes really well for you. I, like I say, I'm very interested in seeing it. It sounds fabulous. So hopefully I'll be able to see it soon.
Brilliant. Thanks so much.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.
So that was the interview with Piers. Hope you enjoyed that one. His film's called Little Monsters. Roger Swim's film is called Miss Purple. If you want to go and look either of those up, Google that and Sundance and you should find them. Next up, we have some highlights for next week on TV. Highlights for next week on TV. It's actually, having had millions of shows come back the last few weeks, we've actually got a fairly short list this week. Starting off on the 30th of January on Universal TV, Law and Order Special Victims Unit returns for part two of season 20. That is back for all you Law and Order fans.
Yay.
That's at 9 p.m. on the 30th of January. Then over on Sky Atlantic on the 31st of January at 10 p.m, we have Camping, which is the US remake of a UK series, although the US remake also happens to star David Tennant, who is British. But anyway, it's David Tennant and Jennifer Garner. It's a series about a group of people that go camping, basically, and people that they meet. That's the basic premise of it. If you're a fan of David Tennant, you're probably going to want to go and see this. I'm kind of interested. I like Jennifer Garner. I like David Tennant, so it might be worth watching. Young Sheldon, back for the second half of the second season. That's on 31st of January at 8:30. That, of course, is the Big Bang Theory spin-off. Big Bang, I think, is going to be back in a few weeks. They haven't given a set date for it yet, but it's due fairly soon. Night Flyers, which is this series, we've been talking about this for a while. It's based on a George R. R. Martin novella, set in the future on the eve of Earth's destruction. Team of scientists and a telepath take a journey aboard the Night Flyer, the most advanced ship in the galaxy, to intercept a mysterious alien spacecraft that might hold their key to the survival. 1st of February, that arrives on Netflix. I think this is a sort of horror elements to it as well, certain horror elements to it as well.
Yeah,
so
it is a horror.
Yeah, space horror mashup thing. Could be kind of interesting. I will give that a go. As I say, I don't hugely do horror, but I'll give it a try. And then we've got Russian Doll coming on the 1st of February as well. This, I think we talked about last week or the week before, follows a young woman named Nadia, played by Natasha Lyonne from Orange is the New Black, on her journey as the guest of honour at a seemingly inescapable party one night in New York. So it's a kind of Groundhog Day-esque premise where she goes through to a certain point in the night and everything resets and she's stuck back in this party again. The trailer for it looked brilliant. It looked very funny. Natasha Lyon is hilarious and I love her in Orange is the New Black, so I'm quite interested to see her in this. It looks really good, but it's called Russian Doll, season one of that, 1st of February, worth the go and watching out for that one. That's all we have for this week in terms of new shows, but there is more. There is a lot more coming in February. It's just this week seems to be a fairly quiet week. So anything else from you?
No, that's all from me. If you want to talk Law & Order SVU or anything like that, you can find me on Twitter at Shaftsworld, which is Shaftsword. I write for Hollywood News Source, and you should definitely keep an eye on Hollywood News Source, the site and its social media over the next 24 hours, as we're going to be launching a competition with not one, not two, but three prizes.
Ooh.
So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, go and check that out, Hollywood News Source. And for us, over the next week or so, if you want to find all the latest air dates and news and stuff, go to geektown.co.uk. If you want to get in touch with your questions and comments, email us on podcast@geektown.co.uk. Leave a message on the website post. Find us at Geektown on Twitter, on Facebook at facebook.com/geektown, on YouTube at youtube.com/geektown, and on Instagram at geektownuk. That is everything. We shall see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.